I'm Christian Abbott.
I'm Nathan Lavender.
I'm Sean Abbott.
And this is the Red Mist Podcast.
Welcome to the Red Mist Podcast, Season 4, Episode 9. This is a good one. The number 9. Melling. Coors Thunderbird of Bill Elliott. Won the Winston Million with this car. Won the 1988 Winston Cup Championship with this car.
That is a good one.
It is a good one. It's iconic.
Yeah.
Love it. Went 200 miles an hour at Talladega. Back in the day. All right. On tonight's episode, we will talk NASCAR and the Cookout 400 at Martinsville. Paperclip. Mm-hmm. We will talk some MotoGP from COTA. Red Bull, I love it. It's the Red Bull U.S. Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's they're getting multiple home races for sure.
And then we will look ahead to this weekend of the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka.
Oh, yeah.
When we recorded last week, we were just speculating that Lawson was getting cut, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like literally the next
Well, I shouldn't day. Say getting cut. It was going to be a driver swap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think it was the next day or two
next day,
that
yeah.
it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're always one day behind on some stuff.
We're always, yeah. All right. So we'll discuss that a little bit, and we'll make our picks. I have Nate's picks. Very excited to have him.
Do you? Can he get back?
I do. Yep. Some shocking picks he's got.
Ah, yes. Yep.
First, I had to text him back because I thought he was going to go for an Alpine 1-2.
He always hopes that the homeland will do something for him.
Yeah. Yeah, the French, right. Gotcha.
We.
All right. Let's get into it. NASCAR's first short track race of the season, a classic track. A lot of hot dogs get eaten there. And going for the trophy, which I think is one of the best trophies, the Grandfather Clock.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think if one track, if I could win a race, I'd be very excited about the trophy. I'd be more excited about the trophy than it was about getting the win.
You would rather the Grandfather Clock over the Lobster?
Yes, by a mile. An oversized, I always love how they have this ginormous lobster at New Hampshire.
Yeah.
That if you cook it, it's absolutely the most disgusting thing.
Traditions,
you know, I know a tradition, but you know, but a large lobster is just not, you know, not the most exciting thing. But anyway, a little tough. Anyways, your winner this weekend, and welcome back to the winner's circle. I don't have Nate here, but Danny Boo Hamlin, who still has a grudge against the crowd. I can't understand why.
I mean, just lean into it at this point. So,
yeah,
just accept it.
Yeah, he led a Toyota 1-2-3 with Christopher Bell second, and his teammate Darrell Wallace third. followed by the Chevrolets of Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, and Ross Chastain. I applaud Ross Chastain because he irritated Joey Logano. So
there you go.
Ross Chastain moves up on my list of favorite drivers. Ryan Preece, Nate's guy, with a fine seventh. Chase Briscoe in ninth, and Talladega Gilliland in tenth. Overall, race was pretty good. It was entertaining. A couple spins here and there, guys, you know, getting, you know, typical short track stuff. Nothing, not like anyone was punting anybody. It was just, you know, somebody, you know, moved over and got taken out, you know, that type of thing, you know, weren't clear. Even though the spotters still said they weren't clear, they moved over.
It was better than the Xfinity race?
The Xfinity race, yes. That was awesome. That was NASCAR at its finest. I will say that. You know.
I was going to say, I saw some highlights of that. Well, let me rephrase that. I saw the highlight of
the highlight lap.
And it sounded like that's how the rest of the race was going. So I just was more turned off from even watching the cup race on Sunday.
Some folks were posting, it was a dumpster fire. It truly was a dumpster fire.
Yeah. I mean, that's I get it, and this is my rant always with NASCAR of like, once it like, you know, has a few good races and then it like maybe, you know, I'll watch it, and then it just takes one round like this just to be reminded like, nope, it's still the same crap. Like I just,
yeah,
I get people will be like, well, it's short track racing. I'm like, yeah, but like, just cleaning the guy out in front of you, like that's not racing, man. Like I get the bump and run, but like cleaning a guy out is not racing.
Yeah, the bump and run is fine. I have, especially on the short track, I have no problem with that. But the dump and run,
yeah,
is not.
And I mean, I can't even remember who won the race. Was it Allgaier that won the Xfinity race?
I don't know.
Anyways,
there was just a lot of
whoever won
lot
the
of
race
ugly.
Was like in fifth going into that lap, and I'm like, oh yeah, because, all right, like yeah, just everyone cleans each other out, and you can sneak by.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him, right place, right time. But
oh, I have no problem with who won the race. I just have a problem with how it happened.
Yeah,
it's just dumb.
So that's just. That's what always gets me.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know.
I mean, fair play to NASCAR. They've got a good run of no green, white checkered finishes right now. So,
yeah.
Hopefully I didn't just jinx that, but.
You know. Yeah. No, Denny hung around all day, and him and Larson kind of hung around all day. And then Larson didn't, he had a bad restart on the final.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of slipped back. Elliott Chase gave him a break to get in. And then towards right on the last lap, Larson moved over and let Elliott take fourth. Kind of classy move.
Yeah.
So.
That's good.
But yeah, it was. You know, I don't think he had, you know, it wasn't much he could really do. So.
Mm-hmm.
But. Anyways, all right. Well, that's exciting. Let's take a quick look at the points, shall we? Well, Nate would be anxious to see this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, William Byron is our points leader and locked in. Kyle Larson is second in points and locked in. Christopher Bell has three wins, but he's in fourth place on points. Chase Elliott in third place, no wins. Hamlin, six with a win. And Josh Berry, 19th with a win, but he's locked in. Pretty exciting.
I mean, hey, win and you're in. That's all that
win
matters.
And you're in.
There is nothing else matters.
Matters.
As long as you win, you're in.
You're in.
If you don't win, you're probably not going to be in. So
right.
That's all it takes. Unless, well, actually.
Tremendous.
Did Logano win last year?
Yes, he did.
Okay. So he won and was in.
He won, but he lucked out on that race. Oh, no, wait a minute. He didn't. I don't know. Something happened. Anyways, doesn't matter. Can't stand him. No. Anyways, enough of him. Can't stand that guy. Anyways, let's move on to real racing. The MotoGP at COTA. I am absolutely amazed by these guys the more and more I watch them. Because the track, we had rain, and the race took place on a drying track. So they didn't go, they went with slicks. In the warm-ups leading, you know, where they go and do reconnaissance laps, guys are dumping bikes left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And in one hilarious moment, the safety car took itself out.
Oh.
With a fantastic spin and crash.
Oh, that's
all by its onesie. Okay. Yeah, that's where that was. That was fantastic.
All right.
Oh. So we went to the grid formation. Mark Marquez on pole with Alex, his brother, second. Teammate Pekka Bagnaia. I can't pronounce the poor guy. I love the guy, but I can't pronounce his name. He was third. And man, these guys went. And Mark Marquez got away, and Alex was kind of cruising around in second. But, I mean, they were making passes, like, not them, but the back, you know, the guys in the mid-pack. You know, if you just put one wheel wrong, you were, like, you're going to go flying. These guys were, like, passing people. It was crazy. And they had the best thing about MotoGP is the high definition slow-mo cameras, because they were coming down the back straight and the guys were braking for that, you know, you come off the, you know, they make that left hander there, then they go into the twisty bit. The bike literally was picking up the rear wheel, and because they were dumping on the front brake.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all you could see was just the tire just lifting up. And then they dump it in the corner. And I was just like, these guys are nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah. I mean,
they're on
racing bikes. So, I mean, of course, you got to be a little crazy to do that.
But, I mean, and then you're laying the thing over an inch from the ground.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Absolutely crazy. So it was amazing. So then Bagnaia got past Alex Marquez and started to kind of reel in Mark Marquez, and then he got to within a second, and then Marquez kind of started to pull it out again. So he's pulling it out, and he goes in through, comes down through one, goes into two, and then starts going through the S's. And before you come, you know, you make the ones that go, you start, just before you start to go up the hill, there's a last set of left rights. He tried to cut the left hand, the right hander, and he put the bike into the water and dumped it. Jeez. So he went down. Bike slid, the rear foot peg came off the bike. He gets the bike back up and he's riding. He does three laps with a foot peg. It was nuts. He was just trying to stay in it, but after three laps, he was like, he couldn't do it. And the front windshield there, that windshield, the fairing, it cracked. So he was getting buffeted so bad. So Bagnaia pulled by him. Marquez went, his brother Alex went by him. And then they duked it out. Alex got within a half second, and then Pecco just pulled away. I think he was just saving the tires and pulled away. And then it was wild. Like I said, it was the most entertaining 20 laps of racing I've seen all season, and it was just absolutely skillful throughout the pack. So awesome stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was. And Mark having a off now has flipped the point standing. His brother Alex is now 1 point ahead of him. Mm-hmm. Even though no one is locked into the final here. This is pure points, just to let people know.
Yeah. Full season. Yeah.
Pecco is 11 points behind Mark and 12 points behind Alex. And then Frankie Morbidelli's 20 behind Bagnaia. But it's just awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. Next race for these guys. Oh, Qatar. Qatar.
That should be good because it's a bike.
That's really a bike track, right? Yeah. So that should be fun.
Yep.
That's not this week, but next week. That's exciting. But yeah, wow, what a fun, just great stuff to watch. The coverage is amazing too. It's really good, and it's on Fox.
Hey, they do stuff.
FS1. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Let's move on to news and notes. Before we get to the big story of the week in F1 and Suzuka, let's just to touch on a couple things. Jay Fry, canned by IndyCar, is now president and CEO of Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing. Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
No thoughts on that?
Not really.
I'm not
well versed on it. I just saw management change, so it's
yeah. Didn't really affect you.
No, not at the moment. I did see. Speaking of IndyCar, I did see. IMS opened up there, or at least
yes, did a whole the museum
with their museum.
Yeah, it opened.
That looks, yeah,
looks
great.
Yeah, I mean we saw it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw before the renovation. Yes,
before the renovation. I mean, yeah. we were all impressed with it.
Yeah,
so much so that we paid the extra money and came back the next day to take the private tour.
The basement tour,
which was amazing.
So that's what I was trying to look for. Because they redid the whole thing. So on the you walk in, it's no longer just the one level that you walk into. They've also added a second floor in there.
Right.
You know, like probably like half of the building, I'd say, has a second floor. From the ground level, and then I think they did a great job with that.
It looks awesome
to kind of move everything around a bit more, and it seems like but what interested me was that they went downstairs as well, and I can't remember if that is the basement that we went and toured around, or if that was like,
I think
the
it's
level,
the basement,
if like there was like two underground levels, you know, where we were at like the second lowest one, and then they just made the first lower level where you could walk around, because I was trying to I was trying to remember all of the cars that we saw, because they had a lot of stuff, but they, because all the engines of throughout the years, that was displayed up on the ground level. They had a good chunk of cars that weren't on the main floor when we were there, that were in the basement, that they had moved upstairs as well. I mean, the first car literally that they showed off when you walked in on this renovation was Sterling Moss's Mercedes.
No. Really?
Yeah, but that's what we walked into first on the basement tour.
I know, down in the basement. I know, and I was so
they
amazed.
They pulled that up.
Oh, okay. So now maybe everything is up there.
Right. That's kind of what I'm getting at now, is like everything is there. So then I guess the rest of that collection, did that get is it somewhere in a different warehouse? Because didn't they say that they had another space?
Well, there was that one door. There was, remember when we were walking out to the elevator and it was like this black garage door, and the guy said, "Oh, there's more cars back there," and then there were other cars at another location. Now the last set of cars that were on, not when we first walked in Moss's car, and then we kind of all went counterclockwise. The last set of cars on the right on the way out, that was all part of the Home and George family collection. Mm-hmm. So perhaps those cars have been moved to that other location for the rest of the cars.
Because there was some, like, there were cars there that were not Indy cars. So like it was, which made the basement tour cool to look at, aside from just literally standing over a lot of this stuff.
No, it was cool. The whole thing, that museum is definitely an awesome thing. And I think people should, when you're there, you got to definitely take a tour of it. It was amazing.
And if they offer anything extra
that's private,
go do it. It's worth it.
It's definitely worth it. It was crazy.
I mean, I know we lucked out with the group that we went with, because we were down there.
Oh, I know.
I
think we were down there a lot longer than most groups.
Yeah, but we were also asking some pretty good questions.
Good questions,
Kind of walking,
like the motorcycle,
walking around.
Like, I know the guys were all into all the chain driven cars and stuff. There was a lot of good questions on that. I mean, I was still geeking out of a Sterling Moss car. So, anyways, it was awesome.
I know, because you guys ended up walking around a lot of like the older car collection. Just like regular street cars of the time period. And I was still like,
some of the race cars and
some of the race cars, because I was looking, I was going back and forth between a few of them, just looking at different time periods of like what
it was
here, how'd they do this here. So
that was one of the more impressive places I've been. So it's really, really cool. I thought the museum when we went to Le Mans was cool.
Yes.
This was better. But different cars and stuff, but it was really cool. I mean, it was just just the history and stuff, but it was awesome. It's a great take. I mean, anybody should go see it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Well, actually, speaking of Le Mans, Audi is selling.
Yeah, they're selling their cars.
They're prototypes. So.
They're prototypes and DTM cars.
Oh, is it DTM as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like it.
I like it. A few of us were talking about it, and someone brought up a good point of it'll be cool to see those at any historic festivals if people do decide to go run them. But man, I hope it doesn't take a whole launch control center to.
To start them up,
because I mean those things.
I think you have to get Brad Kettler to come and take care of it for you.
So, God, yeah, because I mean, so we saw 2014 at COTA, and that those cars were cool. And then when we went,
yeah,
in, I think when we went in 16 to Le Mans, was that after they,
yep,
they like really toned down the noise even more?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, because when we went there, like it was literally a fan sucking wind, but or sucking in,
yep,
air behind.
It sounded as, like as it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't, yeah, even hear a motor. You just it just the, yeah, air going behind, being moved behind.
It just went whoosh.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it stunk that they were slow that year, but man, it was cool.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Months until Le Mans.
Yeah, I know, it's getting crazy.
End of March Madness this week, Masters, month of May,
yep,
and then Le Mans.
Yep, it's gonna be wild.
Actually, and then once you get into,
well, May you get the road course at Indy, right, and then we go to qualifying and practice.
Yep,
and then 500. That'll be fun. And oh yeah, Kyle Larson.
Yes. Yep.
His car was revealed. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Just kind of just seeing what else is out there.
Did we talk about Racer buying out MAV TV?
Oh, no. That was the other thing. Right. So Racer Magazine or Racer Race. Yeah. Racer.
Yeah.
Has taken over MAV TV. So now Racer is now an all-encompassing digital and news format site, and there's nothing changing right now. So I mean, the question is, what's going to happen, say, starting next year? That's the thing. There's some significant investors behind Racer. And the content they provide currently is not only going to get enhanced, and I think this is only going to help MAV. You know, this if bringing these two together, I think it's going to be pretty cool. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I think it's fine. Obviously, I shouldn't say it's fine. It's exciting because it's people motivated to put value into the entity. So it'll ultimately come down to whatever they make it to be. And not that MAV TV was bad, but I mean, you know, it was kind of what wasn't it what CBS Sports was.
I think they're trying to get back to what Speed was.
Yes, yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with this.
I think what you're going to see is because I think this is going to be the home of IMSA.
Yeah.
Because you have to think there's a bunch of things. I mean, IMSA has a lot of content in the various support series, but one of the series that's very undervalued that they have that Racer is very tied into is the historic sports car, mm-hmm, which falls under the IMSA brand, IMSA organization. So I think this is going to be the home of IMSA. They are going to embrace streaming as opposed to we're fortunate now that IMSA's like moved to YouTube, but I think this is like a precursor of them moving to YouTube, but Racer and MAV are going to run it for them because I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
I mean, obviously, and then however, if that all turns out how it does and that is IMSA's new home, I guess from there, it really depends on, I guess how much finances they have to go after some of the other series if they want to.
Let's put it this way. I don't know what the length of the Fox deal is for IndyCar.
Yeah.
If that doesn't improve, they're going to have to look to go into streaming, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
That's kind of what, I kind of see happening. As far as the rights to F1, I don't know. I mean, they would need some serious dough to, private equity money to come in and buy those rights.
Yeah.
Because it is, those rights are up. Because ESPN said they're not going to do it. I mean, what I think everyone wants to see is they don't want, if you're in the States, you don't want Sky.
Right.
If we're going to have an American or U.S. Formula One, we're going to have two, technically. Mm-hmm. You want to have U.S. broadcasters. I'm just saying you should have a U.S. broadcasting network. Let me rephrase that because Speed had, we had Bob Varsha, David Hobbs, and Steve Matchett, both who are English. So I'm just, I wasn't trying to go that route. It's not going to be British centric as Sky is.
Right.
In some ways, F1 TV is a little bit like that right now, but there's such a proliferation of British drivers, but it just comes out a little too much. So.
Yeah. And I think the going back and looking at some of those broadcasts on Speed. Yeah. You didn't have much British bias in a sense.
Yeah, no.
Because you
it was very you it's had, very neutral.
Yes, it was very neutral, but it was very neutral because you had each of those guys commented or oh my god. I can't remember the right word. They all worked together and paired very well with one another. They complimented each other. Jeez.
Yep.
They all complimented each other really well.
No, you're 100%.
Varsha
right.
was your U.S. broadcaster, and he was the main guy. So, I mean, any of the action was more or less called by him. And at the time, there really wasn't a U.S. driver or a U.S. team.
Yeah.
Right? So, right then and there, you already have no car, team, or driver to, really back yourself against in emotion and whatnot. Matchett was great in the fact that he had some technical ins and just really loved the sport and from that side and got excited looking at all that stuff. And then similar to how Sam is right now on F1 TV. And then
Sam Collins, yeah.
Yeah, and then Hobbs, he's an ex-driver, but he was, I would say a few generations removed by that point. So he's not looking at it like I know these guys personally because I've raced with them a ton or really at all. So he did have that kind of separation of where he appreciated
their ability.
Yeah, their ability and all the moves and the action, whatever, when it happened.
Impressive. He had no allegiance to being critical if it was a dumb move,
Right. And whereas now, everyone seems like, one person removed from knowing the driver or the team kind of deal. And it just seems like, you have the in, and that's great. And, but it just seems like you're, pushing and pulling for that team once in a while, which, I mean, granted.
Right.
Matchett kind of came out with Matchett once in a while because he would root for his old team or any of his close friends that were in the past.
Right.
But he was rooting for everyone at that point.
Yeah.
It wasn't he wasn't Red Bull is the epitome of this grid, and we should shun them because right. you know they're not my favorite, but like they're dominating the sport. No, he didn't do that with Ferrari, and you know but he always looked at all the other teams and would cheer them on when they you know went through their up and downs, whatnot.
Yep.
With I know I'm kind of just droning on at this point, but like
it gets
back to the whole bit where like when they have races where it was Lando, Lewis, and George in the top three. Like, it was the top, those three, and then it was Behrman, and then all at Silverstone last year. So like,
yeah,
you just couldn't get away from it at that race. And then anytime Max was dethroned last year, It was just like he's falling off a cliff. He's not gonna do it anymore. It's like I understand like the market today is all about headlines and gotcha phrases, whatever. Like if you can sum it up in three words, five words, whatever it is. But like, just the sport is F1 is what it is. And when you have drama and whatnot, like how 2020... Actually, you know what? The best analogy for this is Drive to Survive. Every single year they've come out, there's always been... I guess maybe not the first year, but like... not as much on the first year. But like every season, they mix scenes up from one race and another to try and make some storyline.
Yeah.
But then when 21 came around and you literally had a title battle for the ages, every single race weekend was changing back and forth for momentum and with big crashes, big implications, and yet that season rolls around and I was really amped up for that because I was like, you could have not been handed a better season on a silver platter for you to present and show the world what F1 is when it is truly great.
Yep.
And what did they do?
Right.
Nothing.
That
was one of the biggest balls ever dropped. Last season was good because, you know, you had several different winners, and not just one-time race winners, but multiple Grand Prix winners for multiple drivers like that, which was nice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really shook up the grid from there. Granted, I didn't watch this past season, and I don't think I've watched the past two or three at this point because I'm just fed up with it. And then I see the memes of the series, and you know, like
this year I went
with Max and Lando
so the
and
only
podium, but
the only way I did it was I just went through and I kind of looked at different races and or different shows and said, oh, I'm going to watch that one. Anything with Carlos, I watched. And then the rest of them, I kind of cherry picked. So it was, I didn't watch. I can honestly say I didn't watch all of them. So anyways.
This is all kind of getting back to Racer and Path. But like,
I hope
Racer does really well. What Speed Channel was, I really hope that's what they aspire to be, because if they could do it, that would be great. And if they could somehow, for the American market, pull every bit of motorsports into that one hub, that would be awesome.
Like I said, I think it's a likely spot for IMSA, but you know, we'll see. Let's I mean, there's not much more to say about the Lawson Sonoda thing. I think we just have to wait and see how it plays out this weekend, right?
Yeah. I did listen to the Box and Neutrals guys, so I'm caught up
there. Yeah.
Not their preview for this weekend, but last weekend.
Last weekend, the wrap up for China.
Yeah, they made a really good point. In that one, because I can't remember if the news broke when they dropped or what, but I mean, for for as bad as Lawson did, he was at two tracks that he hasn't been to. And, like, that's another thing to remember, too. Like, he hasn't...
He's
still a rookie in F1 because he hasn't completed a full season. I know he's, like, somewhat not a rookie because he's competed in more than... What is it, like, two or three races? For you to, like, get some rookie benefits, I think it is, of, like, additional testing before you get in the car. But, you put him at two tracks he hasn't been to, or at least not that I know of that he's been to before this, and now you're going to go to Suzuka, a track where he's not only raced at in F1 before at the Racing Bulls, where he finished behind Tsunoda, but like it was barely behind Tsunoda, like it wasn't you know, he was miles off of him. And I think he was ahead of him. Lawson was ahead of Tsunoda at one point, and they swapped the two of them because of strategy. Because Yuki either Yuki messed up in the pits or the team messed up in the pits, but Yuki had the pace with the tires, so it made sense. So not only that, he's also raced a few times in Super Formula, and I mean, talk about a fast car. Like, you're not...
Those fast cars, yeah.
Right. Suzuka is arguably the track with most experience, or I guess would be most well-prepared for an F1 event. And, two races seems way too soon, so... but, I mean, we went into that last week as well. So I wish him all the best for Yuki. If he can prove that, you know, he's got pace, good for him. But I mean, I think Red Bull is delusional to think that they will win the World Constructors title. At least for this year, because I don't think they have the lineup to do it.
Right.
They clearly have the driver to win the driver's title, but I don't think the lineup is there. And I mean, not that Lawson or Yuki are bad drivers. I just think there's better ones on the grid that would be a better second driver. However, it's tough to say that as well because the Red Bull has been notorious to be just it's to one driver. That's all who can drive it. That was the other thing that I meant to mention. Box and Neutral guys also brought up, you know, what if Max leaves at the end of this year?
Then
what they basically concluded to was you are generally you genuinely have a situation where if you remove the top guy, that Red Bull car goes from being the fastest car, or I guess now it's probably the third fastest, right? But if you have a top three car because you have the number one driver in it, and if he goes, that car falls to somewhere in the midfield.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So, like, that was a really interesting point I thought of. Just, like, that's the difference a driver makes. And it comes down to a driver, the team, and... God, why can't I remember the third piece of that puzzle? I don't want to say finances because that's part of the team as well. But anyways, like there's always your three components to the race, and then I guess just luck of how the race goes around. But I mean, if that yeah, like the team part and the car part is really critical. But like what really separates you from having a fast car versus having the top car, it's the driver. So yeah, that was
that's interesting. A good point.
Interesting for sure to listen to, because then even I guess you're even seeing this on kind of the flip end, like with Williams. You now arguably have probably the strongest lineup they've had since Bottas and Stroll.
Yeah.
I'd say. I'm sorry. Bottas and Massa.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase that. Because that car was like the second best car in 2014. Granted, the Mercedes engine was super powerful at the time, so that's where they lucked out with that. But I mean the Williams lineup is definitely a strong one, but the car just, you know, isn't quite there to make that next step. But they've shown with capable drivers that they can, competent drivers, they can put in a good result. China wasn't great, but I'm always a little skeptical to give praise on a sprint weekend, because you get one practice session and then you're just kind of locked into the car for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
So that's always tough to give any credit there. Plus China, I would think, would be a stronger track for Williams anyways, with the long straights, because that's where they shine. But
all right,
yeah,
some good points there. All right, should we get into our picks?
Sure.
We got Nate's.
All right.
He's got Fernando for the win.
Okay.
Leclerc second.
All right.
And he has Pierre Gasly third. Nate, and his dark horse with Lance Stroll.
Nate, best of luck to you.
Yep. Oh, good luck. Good luck with those. My picks. I am going to go with the Red Bull, and I am going to go with Max Verstappen.
All right.
My reason for that is I think weather is going to come into play here. There's a threat of rain on Sunday, and if it rains, I think the Red Bull, I think Max is the best driver in the rain. And my second...
It's going to rain in the morning, so by the afternoon...
I know, but that's where I'm going with this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go Oscar second.
Okay.
And I am going to go... I'm going to say Lewis bounces back with a third here.
Alrighty.
My dark horse is going to be... I'm going to go Kimi Antonelli.
Okay. Mercedes driver is your dark horse?
Huh? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, he's a rookie Mercedes driver.
Yeah. I am going to go... I'm going to go Piastri.
Mm-hmm.
Wins. Because I think he's the hottest McLaren driver right now.
Yep.
I know Lando won Australia and Oscar didn't have a... Or had a mistake in the, the wet there, but
yeah.
Given that it's race three right now and the pace of that McLaren, yeah, he's quick. I'll go Lando P2 and Max
P2. Lando P2, yep.
Yeah. And then Max to finish out the podium.
Yeah.
Dark Horse. Alright, if you used Antonelli as your Dark Horse, can I use Tsunoda as the Dark Horse?
Sure. Okay. Why not?
Because, I mean, he's got nothing to lose this weekend, and it would definitely be a cool story. Not that I wish anything negative on Liam, but like that having a Japanese driver on the podium would be cool, and it would be the first time since Kamui did it in 2012.
Yeah.
2013. One of those years. Granted, he did that in the Sauber, which was really cool. So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I like that. I like that pick a lot. All right. So we shall look forward to this weekend and see what happens.
Yes. And then where's Japan? F1's in Japan. Where's NASCAR this weekend? Did I stump him?
Darlington.
Oh yeah, it's throwback livery week.
Yeah, throwback.
Yeah. All right.
All right. On that note,
good night.
Thank you guys for listening to the Red Mist Podcast, hosted by Christian Abbott, Sean Abbott, and Nathan Lavin. It's produced by Christian Abbott, and music is by Alex Wart and Harrison Tate.